Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dance Monkey Dance. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, banner day in South Carolina.
That's a day for celebration, isn't it?
Oh, man. I woke up this morning and I was flipping through Instagram and there was a post that was like, the last picture of Lindsey Graham taken was with a drone. And I was like, that's a weird headline. And then I went on Reddit and I was like, I'm scrolling through Reddit and it was like, Lindsey Graham dead. And I was like, no, I was like, that can't be. He's sucking on the souls of children. He's not dying. And then I did an independent search on Google and I was like, holy fuck. He's actually dead.
Yeah, I was the same way. Yay. So that's two Republicans down.
Yes.
Things happen in threes.
Yes, and that's what
we can only hope.
What a lot of people are saying. It's funny because before I saw the picture of Lindsey, I had scrolled by something on Instagram and it was this woman talking about astrology and this dude that predicted that July 16th, 2026 would be this turning point day. And he had also predicted a couple of years before he died in 2020, there'd be a global crisis.
Okay.
So that was before I saw the Lindsey thing. So, you know, if there's a higher power or like the universe wants me to understand that like there is something more to this, then they need to take care of the big elephant in the room. On or about the 16th. I'm not picky.
Right. I don't know. I think there's a really good case for treason right now. If only we had an administration that would do something, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it is good to see that pure evil can disappear and die.
Yeah. I mean, unlike, I guess Mitch's situation, yeah. our governor will just appoint a new, I guess they were saying he can appoint like an interim senator. But there is an election coming up, in November. So go ahead.
Yeah, he can put somebody in until Lindsey's term is over the end of the year, beginning of next year.
Yeah. But I guess that person will have to run because of the like he's going to fill in, but I guess he's then running for re-election.
Right.
And the woman that's running against him came out with a thing this morning that was like, putting politics aside, we feel very bad for Lindsey's family and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, everybody was ripping her apart from fucking MAGA. And it's like, oh, because she's being a decent human being. I get it.
Yeah, I am kind of surprised how many people are posting good things about him. And it's like, you know, don't forget what a piece of shit he is.
Yeah, I saw. I don't know if you saw the Hunter Biden thing,
but I did.
Yeah, so he was like, I choose to remember him before Trump because you know there will be a time after Trump, but he still fucked up all kinds of lives.
Oh yeah,
like you can remember the person that he was, but you have to acknowledge the shithead that he became.
Right.
So, yeah. I have no sympathy for Lindsey Graham. He dug that hole and he's got to fucking lay in it now.
Face down.
Yep. So yeah. Very weird day.
Yeah. Apparently like yesterday he was in Kiev.
Yeah. So I gotta imagine at 70, all those plane rides back and forth, he had a blood clot travel to his heart or something. Like,
you don't think Putin did it? I mean, they've been throwing generals out of windows.
I mean,
you
if,
know?
If they can make it look like a blood clot or cause a blood clot or whatever, but like they always tell like people over 50 that when you're traveling by plane, you need to be wearing like compression socks and, you know, moving around and like, don't just sit there for the entire trip. And like, he's going back and forth to the fucking Middle East and like, to Ukraine and stuff. So they're not short flights. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he had a blood clot in his leg that traveled up to his heart and killed him.
Well, that assumes he has a heart. Well, had a heart.
Well, something stopped beating. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, good.
Now, if only the burger in chief would take a long flight.
I think they should have let him fly on his piece of shit new airplane and, you know, let the shit fall where it may.
Yeah, I mean, he was boasting again that he went back for another physical, and it's like four physicals in a year is not healthy. Like, that just means that they're looking for something.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just a matter of time. Come on.
Oh, God.
Come on, baby. Roll that dice.
Yeah.
Just one more hamburger. Come on.
We had a couple of other notable deaths this week.
Who died?
Bonnie Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
Singer. Total Eclipse of the Heart. That's a big chart topper.
Yeah, I remember that as a kid. And, like, that video was all over MTV.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Didn't it take place in, like, a castle? And the other one was... Or something? Am I thinking of the wrong video?
It was kind of vampire-y.
Okay.
Because Jim Steinem, who wrote like all those songs for Meatloaf, wrote that song. And he was trying to do a musical of a Roman Polanski movie called The Fearless Vampire Killers? Fearless Vampire Hunters? I think it's Killers.
Okay.
And that's like the main theme from that show.
Oh, okay.
So it was very, very goth.
Okay. Nice. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Who was the other one?
Randy Mantooth.
I don't know if I recognize that name.
No, he was Johnny Gage on Emergency.
Oh, okay.
In the 80s.
Emergency. Way before. Was that before Chips?
I think so.
I can never remember.
And is that where Rampart, We Have a Burn Victim came from? I think it was.
Maybe.
I thought there were like two similar shows. Back in the day, but I can't remember what the other one was. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like there was. It wasn't. I mean, there was Hawaii 5-0. There was Emergency. But yeah, I feel like there was another one during that time that was similar. Maybe it was like a spinoff or something.
I don't know.
I mean, this was 72 to 79. It's a decent run for the 70s.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Don't know.
Adam 12 chips.
Oh, maybe that was it. No, not chips. Maybe it was Adam 12.
SWAT?
Yes. Martin Milner and Kent McCord.
Okay.
Yep, that was it.
Okay. And that kind of happened. It aired from 68 to 75, so that was right in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of rescue shows now. You can get rescue shows for every city in America. Isn't there like an entire anthology series? Not anthology, but like, isn't there like multiple series set around like Chicago now? Isn't there like Chicago Fire?
Hope. Yep.
And I thought
Chicago
that
Fire, Chicago Hope.
I thought the series that Marina Baccarin is in now is like a spinoff of like one of those emergency shows.
It's a spinoff of the one with the prisoners who end up being fire jumpers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Is it called Fire Rescue?
It's Sheriff Country, and Fire Country was what it's a spinoff of.
Fire Country. That's right. Yep. Yeah.
Because she did four episodes of that, and then they made her own show.
Well, must be nice.
Yeah, you know. You get a pretty woman to be the lead actor, and, you know, all the incel guys will watch. All of a sudden, they're big fans of procedural law enforcement television. I mean, it's written for a specific audience. Mickey Fox investigates criminal activity and patrols the streets of small town Edgewater while contending with her ex-con father and a mysterious incident involving her wayward daughter.
Ooh.
Jesus Christ. We need one more thing. All right, throw in a weird daughter. Okay. No, Caroline Ray is in it.
As the daughter?
Yeah, it's like Benjamin Button.
Ah.
She's older than her mom. She's the only other person I recognize in the cast, so. So, yeah. Wow. I haven't thought about emergency in a very long time.
Neither have I. And all of a sudden it all comes rushing back.
I want to say something that stuck with me because of emergency was there was an episode that I saw when I was a kid where back in the day, beer cans had pull-off tops. And there was a guy who would pull the top off and put it in the beer and then drink the beer instead of tossing it on the ground or whatever. And he gets it caught in his throat and he's choking. And I have these memories of a child of watching them, like in TV style, take a big set of forceps and like stick them down his throat to get the beer cap out or the beer tab out. And that is an image that has stuck with me throughout my entire life.
Yeah, that's kind of disturbing to think about.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Not the type of pop tops we have today, but the one that you actually peeled off.
Yep. Yep. And I remember as a kid, like when the pop tops now became popular, people still like working them off and either putting them in their drink or throwing them away and stuff. And I was like, nope, never going to do that. That's, I saw that in a TV show once and I don't want something done with it.
Yep.
Oh, weird childhood memories, man. What did you watch this week?
Memories are started with the second episode of Silo.
Yes, I'm all caught up.
Okay, good. It's very interesting how they jumped from her being the outcast and meeting Steve Zahn in the other Silo and then coming back, and then all of a sudden she's like the new anointed mayor, but she's being very closely watched.
Yeah, I'm hoping that there's some kind of flashback to when she actually comes back into the Silo, and because there's a, I think, I don't know if they say it in episode one, but in episode two, they talk about how like they made her mayor while she was unconscious.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did that all come about? Like, and I've read that this is not how the books go. Like the books are very different when it gets to this point. They're like the whole thing of like, people are just accepting that she's now the mayor and she has no idea who anybody is. It's a little strange for like a society.
Yeah.
So yeah. And like the weird part is that, the guy who played Bernard, oh my God, Tim Robbins, is still in the cast list. But like,
well, who is the algorithm?
I don't know. I tried looking that up because I wanted to know who the voice was and there was no listing for it. So I don't know. I mean, I do think it's an interesting premise that so there's flashbacks this season to before whatever the situation was where everybody went into the silos, and there's a mirror going on between the drugs that they're giving to, what's her first name?
Camille?
The main character.
Juliet?
Juliet. And the dude's sister, and how they're purposely keeping her memories at bay through the drugs, and the algorithm knows all of this information, and they talk about how like they've reset silos over hundreds of years. So I'm wondering whether or not it's actually later in the timeline, and that all of this stuff has been happening kind of like Battlestar Galactica, where it's happened before it will happen again type thing.
Yeah. There's a speculation that the algorithm could be, the congressman.
Okay.
That keeps showing up in the flashbacks.
Yeah. Okay, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like because it's cable television and there's only, what, 8 episodes to a season?
Yep.
That the story's got to move quick. And the first episode felt like there was a decent clip to it, but this second episode felt like it dragged a little bit. So I don't know. I don't want to see them waste any time and not get the story. Although I guess they're already working on season 4. So
yeah,
maybe it's a overarching 2-season thing.
I don't know. It feels very different than the last 2 seasons.
Yeah.
But now we're 2 episodes in, which means there's only about 6 left. So get moving.
Yeah. I mean, at least Silo has kept up in pacing as far as like, we're 3 seasons in and like every year we're getting a season. It's not like we're having to wait a very long time between seasons.
Right.
There's actually 10 episodes for this season.
Ooh.
So.
Take us right through the summer.
Yeah, the final one is September 4th.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the Friday before Labor Day?
Yeah.
Cool.
The summer season.
Yes. And then maybe something else will be ready to kick in.
Well, then we should be getting all the other shows back, hopefully.
Right. We can hope.
What else did you watch?
What have you been watching? Oh, you're going to ask me.
Nope. Okay. I'll go. Because there wasn't too much on, I kind of watched a couple of older movies.
I had
done a deep dive on YouTube of, there's a guy that does a bunch of filming locations in and around LA. So that got me watching movies from the 80s and the 90s. And the first one that I watched was Men at Work. I don't know if you've seen this interesting piece of film.
John Cusack?
No, it's Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen.
Is that They Threw Away a Perfectly Good White Boy?
No, that's Better Off Dead.
Okay. Oh, Better Off Dead. Okay.
Yeah, so Men at Work is Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen play best friends, not brothers, best friends who are garbage men, and their dream is to open a surf shop. And while they're garbage men, they find a body of a political candidate in the trash. And then they get into all kinds of hijinks. There's a kidnapping. There's hitmen. There's like this weird, like you could only do this in the early 90s. But it's them goofing around as garbage men. And I remember watching this. It had to be in the early 90s. It was right up my alley comedy wise for the time. It was stupid humor and shit like that. And like part of the plot involves that the reason that the dude gets murdered is because he's part of a plot to dump, toxic waste in the ocean. There's a bad guy that's over the top that wears like one black glove and he talks in a really weird manner. And he's got this office where it's like all painted black. And he's got like a map of the ocean and little like representations of the barrels. Like, it's really bizarre. But it's goofy and it's kind of fun. I'm trying to think of, Keith David plays a guy hired by the garbage company to ride along with Emilio and Charlie because like they're going through the garbage. If they find like, so they find a bowling ball. So they're bowling in the alleyway at like 6 o'clock in the morning. And so Keith David is on the truck when they find the body. And so the three of them take the body, and then instead of just reporting it to the police, they take the body back to an apartment, and then they order pizza, and the pizza guy accidentally sees a dead body. So then they kidnap the pizza guy. Like, it's this really convoluted plot, but I don't know. It's kind of funny. It's a typical like early 90s comedy. I don't know if it would interest you, but
I don't know. I watched a lot of bizarre stuff this past week.
Okay, what'd you watch?
So I started with the new Enola Holmes.
Okay.
And I liked it. I liked these movies. I think she's really good in them. I think they're fun, escapist. Yeah.
Okay. I watched the first one. I don't know if I got around to the second one.
Okay.
Are they all on kind of like the same level? Vein.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And it's kind of similar to the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies.
Yeah.
So it's kind of period, but it's also kind of contemporary in terms of like dialogue, and it's just a kind of a fun, mindless watch.
How much Henry Cavill do we get in this one?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
And don't get nearly as much Helena Bonham Carter either.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. I would recommend to any person who likes that genre.
I mean, I do remember liking the first one. I don't know why I didn't watch the second one. Or did I?
Yeah, it's worth checking out.
Okay.
Also watched a couple of early 90s gangster movies.
Oh, okay.
So one of them was Oscar with Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, I kind of remember that.
And yeah, and it was like, I thought it was pretty good for what it was. It's a farce. It's, you know, slapstick humor. Marissa Tomei is in it, Kurtwood Smith, Tim Curry, Kirk Douglas. And it's basically, you know, Stallone is a gangster who's trying to go straight. And there's mistaken identities. It's just another stupid, silly movie. Lots of old school actors are in it playing, you know, associates of the mob.
Yeah. Oh, it was directed by John Landis.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I know that this movie came out when I was working at the movie theater. So if it came to the theater, I'm pretty sure that I watched it, but I don't really remember it.
Okay. The second one was Woody Allen's Bullets Over Broadway.
Okay.
Which stars John Cusack as a playwright whose agent gets his latest work funded by promising a gangster that they'll put his girlfriend in it.
Okay.
And it's got Diane Wiest. It's got Chaz Palminteri. Again, another kind of slapsticky farce with gangsters. Lots of funny stuff.
Okay.
Good cast.
Very young John Cusack.
Yes. Yeah. And then I ended up watching, because we talked about it a few weeks ago, the Philadelphia Project.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a horrible 1980s movie. You know, it's that time travel experiment. It's Michael Paré, who was also in Eddie and the Cruisers that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Nancy Allen from RoboCop.
Yeah.
And, you know, Michael Paré and this other guy get some kind of anomaly strikes this battleship that they're trying to make radar invisible. And whatever they do ends up creating this kind of black hole that it gets sucked into. And somehow Michael Paré and the other guy get thrown to the West Coast in like the contemporary, you know, in like 1984 and not like 1948 when the movie takes place. But it's got that horrible rotoscope electricity effect a lot.
Yep.
And the going into the vortex is like where they just keep like flipping red lights on and off.
Yeah.
And they end up in what in 1984 would have been modern times at this diner in the middle of nowhere, and Michael Paré goes to use the payphone, and he's trying to get hold of their old base, and you know, nobody that he knew is there. Nancy Allen randomly is some woman who was going to the diner for a job, and they gave it to somebody else. And Paré and his friend end up kidnapping her, sort of.
Yeah.
But she drives the car because they can't drive automatic. It's very odd. And at one point, the friend ends up going back in time again and lives his life. And the military kind of tracks them down and is talking to Michael Paré about what happened. And he's told that they interviewed a lot of the survivors, and they all said that he and the other guy were the ones who shut down the experiment and saved everybody. So they have to send him back in time. And he goes back in time, and he ends up saving, you know, shutting down the project.
Yeah.
And then he comes back to the 80s so he can hang out with Nancy Allen again. But you already showed us that you can go back in time and, you know, finish your life. And why does he have to come back to this time period? And yeah. It was very weird. And then there's the whole scene, like when they finally rescue the battleship from this black hole, it shows up in again, the modern times, but there are like these people who are like merged with the ship.
Yeah.
And then it's never really talked about. It was, I don't know. It was a very weird movie, but it was 1984. So it was a very weird time.
Yeah. Everything that they could do with special effects, they were trying to do. And I can't remember what year. So this was what, 1984? 84. And then 4 years before that was the Final Countdown, where you had the aircraft carrier going back to World War II instead. So like, I'm sure somebody somewhere was like, hey, you know that film we did a couple of years ago? Well, what if we did it the other way? And then I guess they remade the Philadelphia Experiment in 2012.
Yep.
Oh, and Michael Pare is in that as well.
Yes, he is.
Malcolm McDowell. I just looked up Michael Pare's IMDb. He's got 30 things coming out, upcoming. That's crazy.
That's really crazy.
I mean, I can't tell you like the last thing that I saw him in that like I could name for you, but like homeboy's keeping busy. It looks like he does a lot of Christmas movies.
Oh, like Hallmark?
Yeah, and then it looks like he does a bunch of those like knockoff you know, when somebody comes out like, you know, Pacific Rim, there's like Atlantic Rim or one of those. It looks he's doing a lot of those, like Shark Island and Alien, Rubicon. You know, so, I mean, but if he's getting paid, man.
Yeah, definitely.
He's not having to fucking dig ditches, you know, good for him.
Right. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then as a sequel to that, I then watched 1985's My Science Project.
Oh, I love My Science Project.
It didn't really, well, again, it had horrible special effects.
Yes.
But it felt to me like one of those Star Trek episodes where they go to someplace else, but it's really just the Enterprise that's been like redressed to look like, you know, it's medieval or something.
Yeah.
Because when they activate this time machine that they found, he's like walking through the high school, and at one point they like meet Cleopatra and they meet Japanese soldiers and they meet some kind of apocalyptic Mad Max type people, and it's like, okay, it was really cheaply done.
It was, but I mean, it was a fun 80s film for sure.
Oh yeah, Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, that, like,
he's the teacher.
Yeah, there was a couple of those, like, like Fisher Stevens is in it. John Stockwell, who plays the main guy, I had seen him. I think he was Cougar in the original Top Gun in the beginning. I don't remember whether this was before or this had to be after, because Top Gun was 84 or was it 86? Maybe this was right before. And I remember seeing Top Gun and being like, oh, that's a dude from My Science Project. But yeah, like Fisher Stevens running around with like a M16 and shit as they like battle the things in the school. I always wanted a prop replica of the alien engine that turns into the time machine.
Yes.
Because like that was right around when they had introduced the plasma balls, like at like Spencer's and stuff. You could go and like play with the plasma balls and stuff. Spencer's. And that's got one in the center. And I was like, oh, I want one of those. I want like that sitting on my shelf is like, yeah, it's an alien engine, but it's got this plasma thing in it. Like it was, I don't know, as a kid. I mean, I was 11 when this came out, so like this was right up my alley. And it's directed by the guy that wrote The Last Starfighter. So, you know, that was one of those where like I was just like all over like what this dude was doing, because I really loved Last Starfighter. So
right, yeah.
But I mean, he did kind of kill his career with the Whoopi Goldberg movie Theodore Rex. He both wrote and direct that, and that was kind of the last thing he's done. So, you know.
So back in 2023, a member of the RPF actually did a 3D print of it.
Did he share the STL files?
That's what I'm looking at. does not say. Wait. Yeah. Somebody a year ago asked if he would share his, if they could get his file, because they own one of the cars that was used in the movie.
Okay.
But there was no response.
Of course.
Damn it.
I think that'd be a fun project.
It would be.
Yeah, I don't see anything on like Yeti or anything.
No. The last thing I watched was a Touchstone Pictures release.
Yeah.
Back in 85, 86.
Okay.
Ruthless People, Danny DeVito, Bette Midler, Bill Pullman, Judge Reinhold, Helen Slater.
Okay.
Judge Reinhold and Helen Slater kidnap Danny DeVito's wife and try to get ransom for it. And he just has been looking for an excuse to get rid of her.
Yeah.
He's got a mistress, but the mistress and Bill Pullman are a couple, and they've been setting people up for blackmail with video encounters.
Okay.
And they think that they have the videotape of Bette Midler's character being killed, and so they send it to the police chief. But it's actually a video of the woman and the police chief having sex in a car. She thinks she's going to get Danny DeVito arrested for murder. But what's really happening is that it's very out there. And then there's like a serial killer who accidentally dies, and it's a very weird movie. Very weird movie, and very un-Disney-like.
Oh, yeah? I mean,
very much in the vein of, we're going to do something so different that you're never going to think that it was a Disney film. And, yeah. I mean, there's nudity, there's sex, there's cursing, there's the F word. I mean, they go all out.
But isn't that why they made Touchstone Pictures, so that they could do those types of things?
Exactly. Yep. Because they wanted to get away from, you know, the family entertainment.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to broaden their horizons. They had a bunch of failures, like in the late 80s. Or no, late 70s, early 80s, like The Black Hole was a disaster.
Yeah.
Condor Man, The Watcher in the Woods.
Condor.
They co-produced Dragon Slayer.
Yeah.
So they came up, they wanted to have a wider, they said a wider latitude in the maturity of the subject matter.
Hmm. Okay.
But, yeah, it very interesting to see how that came up. And, you know, it, Pretty Woman, Armageddon, Pearl Harbor, The Waterboy, Three Men and a Baby, Sister Act. Those were all Touchstone pictures.
I wonder why they stopped. But
yeah,
that.
They had a.
Because, I mean, a lot of those made a lot of money.
DreamWorks? No. Back in 2012, they were thinking about selling it off. It just became kind of a distribution hub.
Okay.
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's also the time period when, like, Bette Midler was one of Disney's saviors through Michael Eisner. They had Outrageous Fortune. They had Ruthless People. They had Down and Out in Beverly Hills. They had Big Business. I guess very interesting time period.
Yeah.
For the company. But yeah. Have you watched anything else?
Well, I was going to say, speaking of Disney, I don't know if you've seen what Disney is doing to some of their animated films. Have you seen any of the clips of them going back and reanimating with ALS or ASL?
Yes. Yes.
I thought that was really interesting. So Disney has come out and done a bunch of, like, I saw, I think it was Frozen 2, Encanto, Moana, where they have basically, and it's got to be a ton of work, they have reanimated them so that they're using sign language, so that, you know, hearing impaired people can enjoy the movies and I guess feel more connected to the movies because they are using sign language and not, you know, them having to read subtitles. I thought it was very cool. I mean, I don't know. I know a lot of things are Disney cash grabs, like the new Moana live action and all that. But, like, I don't know. There seems to be some thought behind this, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and looking at, so they've released some, like, before and afters. And it looks like, first of all, for anybody who's ever done, like, creative work where you've had to go back to an old project that was on an older system and have everything reconnect correctly and like have all your files there, that's no short undertaking in itself. But then they're going back into the files and I guess they filmed people doing the movements with the hands so that they could copy those without having to, like, go in and animate everything, you know, painstakingly. But, like, just the amount of work that went into that for, I don't know how big of a market that is, but the idea that they're doing that for hearing impaired people is kind of touching. It's kind of shocking to me.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very, very interested to see how many they're actually going to do.
Right.
You know, and whether or not it's just going to be these couple of movies, if there's any interest, or, you know, going forward, it might be, you know, in tandem, there might be like the hearing impaired animators that are doing the ASL version along with the regular version.
Right.
Like it's going to be very interesting to watch and see what happens.
Well, they completed that animation on the three songs in 6 months.
Huh. Okay.
But yeah, very cool use of technology.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there's been, you know, there's always like, what can we do for like more money or whatever, but like the amount of work that those songs must have taken to get to where they are,
right,
is just, it's a testament to the animation division's what's the word I'm looking for? Organizational skills.
Right.
Like that's gotta be like, you need all the assets, you need all of the things to reconnect successfully so that they can just pick up and put the new animation in. And like, mm-hmm. like they're not reanimating everything. They're going in and like target reanimating, but that causes all kinds of problems with the way like shoulders move and how that affects the body. And, you know, if they're in a move where the hands are then going to do something else, they have to compensate for all those movements. And that's crazy.
Right. Well, and it's not just the hand movements. It's the body movements. Yeah. It's the facial expressions. All that stuff comes into this.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see how far they take it.
Yeah. But I like that a lot.
Yeah.
The only other thing that I watched this week was Lethal Weapon 2.
Okay.
It's my personal favorite from the Lethal Weapon movies. And again, I saw a filming video on filming locations. So, Lethal Weapon 2 becomes the perfect blend of action and comedy in a 1980s film. Even though Mel Gibson is a terrible human being, he had really good comic timing back then. And
yep.
Like the setups are so ridiculous of like, Murtaugh's daughter is in a commercial and Riggs makes a big deal about it. And it turns out to be a condom commercial. And like, there's just this banter back and forth that's very funny and very 80s. And quite the callback to my younger days.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the only other thing I watched. You have anything else for this week?
No.
No? All right.
No. That kind of killed my whole list.
All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, you can always send us an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and YouTube and let us know you're listening. So until next week, this is Chris.
This is John.
Have a good week.
Fire station just isn't a fire station without a pole.